That was a track from Chloe Flowers' new album, I Love Me More, and it was played by the pianist herself. I'm Erica Wirth, and welcome to this pianist podcast. Today, I am catching up with the American composer, writer, producer, and classical pianist, Chloe Flower. Chloe, so nice to have you here on this podcast.
Thank you
Welcome.
so much. I'm so excited to be here.
Oh, well, it's great. I think the last time I spoke to you, I think it was somewhere in London, wasn't it? You were, I can't remember. But it was at the Dorchester Hotel, I
Yes,
believe.
I was just going to say it was the opening of the Christmas lights at the Dorchester.
Oh, wow. It was fantastic. Yes. But anyway, I'm going to talk a bit about your album. But first, you're not the typical classical pianist who I have as an interviewee for this podcast, but you did start out on the classical route, didn't you? You went to Manhattan School, Royal Academy of Music. Tell me about that and how possibly you then moved into other areas.
Yeah, no, I think from a very, I started piano at the age of two, and from a very early age, I knew that I loved classical music. And I think at such a young age, I remember feeling this deep sense of like humanity. I went to, at 3 years old, I performed at a nursing home. And I remember, yeah, and I sat on a little telephone book because back then we had telephones. And I remember understanding how, even at that young age, how classical music and this deep appreciation for this, it's almost like you're appreciating history in a way because it's so old, but how it had this effect on these people who were sick and and who were healing. And so I think having been exposed to classical music at such a young age and having performed at such a young age, it allowed me to really understand and identify this is what I want to do as an adult.
That's fantastic. How wonderful, wonderful. But obviously, you went on to study, and you were obviously a very fine classical pianist. What made you change direction?
I don't even think that I've changed direction. I think a lot of times people like to label me, a pop pianist or crossover, but really I call myself a classical pianist. That is the root. I think for me, it's about stepping outside of the classical genre and exploring all different styles of music because I live in this age, we all live in this age where we have so much access digitally. We can collaborate through Zoom. Like I'm talking to you through a Zoom right now. And so I think that power, I wanted to explore other genres. And that's kind of what I am. I'm a classical pianist. I'm a classical musician that likes to explore all types of music. And in that way, make it more accessible. I mean, the ultimate goal for me is to bring a new audience to classical music. And sometimes the path to doing that is through covers or through collaboration with artists who have huge followings like Cardi B or, Babyface or Nicole. Those are all avenues to bring classical music to another audience that might not listen.
Okay, absolutely. I think you're very right. And you have actually been coined the term popsicle, which describes your style. So what would you say your style is?
I think my style is definitely edgy. I think I approach music like, I don't always know what I'm doing sound-wise. I just go in, I'm like, should I use this? I remember this one recording we did. We were clicking our cell phones together, like, and we use that as a part of the drum beat. We'll whistle, we'll snap. And I think like it's just cool to use all different styles of music. And I think popsicle for me was popular music plus classical music because, I was always like, if I did hip hop, I was a hip hop pianist. If I did R&B, I was an R&B pianist, or I was a crossover pianist if I used beats. So for me, it was more like an anti-genre in a way. It was like, how do I describe my sound in one word or one sentence? Without, because when you can get into popsicle and say, I do hip hop and I do R&B and I do now Broadway and film music and classical. And so it was really just trying to make classical music popular.
Okay, I like the name Popsicle. It's a very happy name.
And I wanted to be able to express it to kids too. I talked to so many kids. I'm like, it's popsicle, it's a little more accessible.
Yeah, it's a very positive word. And when you were talking about kind of clapping and tapping your phone and finding all different styles, Does that include a lot of improvisation?
Oh, definitely. I mean, that session in particular was with a house DJ. So I'm obviously not a house pianist, right? But I do have some house records coming out. His name is Mo Chalk. He's an amazing Brazilian DJ. And that was completely, I walked in. I actually flew straight from London to Los Angeles from the Royal Philharmonic recording at Abbey Road, literally picked up a suitcase in New York, got back on a plane in 5 hours, and flew to LA and did this session. And he was like, let's do bossa nova. And I was like, I'm Googling, what are bossa nova chords? Because I've never played bossa nova before. And so that's that idea of doing things that scare you and just approaching a session like, you sometimes you have to tell yourself, even if you don't know what you're doing, you have to tell yourself you're going to know what you're doing. It's going to happen, and just walk in there like you know what you're doing. And so obviously I was like a little bit nervous, but then it worked out. It was so fun, and I got to learn bossa nova.
Oh my goodness, how amazing! That's incredible. And with your new album, do you include any bossa nova in that?
No, sadly, I had already just recorded my album. This album is actually different from my other two albums because it's not as it doesn't have beats. The only live drum I have is with Questlove on Cruel Summer, and other than that, it's just piano and orchestra. So I think for this album, because I wanted this album to be about self-love and healing, I just wanted to do something that was just beautiful.
Okay, I think listeners everywhere, the new album is called I Love Me More. Tell me about that.
I'm laughing so hard. Nobody can see me, but my mom hates that title. She was like, that is so narcissistic. And why are you calling it that? It's so selfish. And I'm like, no, it's not. Like, it was originally going to be a Valentine's Day album about love. And I think music is the best expression of love. And so I just felt like, and that's, as a composer and a pianist, like that's what you're always trying to do on stage, is to love your audience and express how much you love this music. And just, if I could describe classical music, I would just say it's about love. I like tragedy, and love is not always happy. And as I was writing the album, I was like, oh, I've had some terrible breakups. And when I was in a relationship last time, I felt like I was listening to these songs that were empowering, like Beyonce, but also classical. And so then it shifted from like a love album that was supposed to be released on Valentine's Day to loving yourself. Because I think, especially as a musician for me, and I think this is the case for anybody in any industry, we often can be very hard on ourselves. And musicians are uniquely empathetic and empathic. So it's really important to take care of your mental health and to take care of yourself and love yourself, because you can't really love somebody if you don't love yourself, right? So that was the story behind I Love Me More, was these are the songs that are empowering me and make me feel joy and bring me up when I'm feeling down, or make me feel excited about just loving myself. So that became the album. That wasn't the original. My marketing team was like so annoyed with me. They were like, wait, it's not coming out on Valentine's Day. I was like, no, screw Valentine's Day.
It's so funny. So it's just come out, hasn't it? Beginning of May.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. And I've listened to some of the tracks very briefly. There was a lovely heart moving yesterday.
Yes, that was one of my favorites.
Yeah. And who are you performing with on yesterday?
So yesterday I did a version for piano and orchestra, and then as I was writing, I thought, my mentor Babyface could kill this song because his voice is just so perfect and angelic for this. It's a much slower version than the original version, and yesterday has a lot of history for me. It was a very full circle moment doing that particular song, because I had listened to that song so much with my mother. So yesterday to me represented kind of this my mother's generation, Korea, and then America, like Western culture. Because my mom never listens to pop music, but she always listened to Yesterday because she would have these VHS K dramas flown in from Korea because we didn't have Netflix, obviously. So her friend would tape them. I think this was illegally, would tape them and ship them to us. And my mom would watch it. And it was called Yesterday. And it would play Yesterday the whole time. And so this was a song that connected me and my mom and also connected our cultures because, you know, she would sing it in English and it was like really cool. And so when I was recording this song to do it with my mentor, who really has given, I wouldn't be here without Babyface. He taught me everything. And so it was a really beautiful moment. So that was always going to be my first single.
Oh, that's so lovely. And that was recorded at Abbey Road.
Yes, yeah. Which is
That
crazy, right? And it was mixed at Air. And so when you walk into Air Studios, there's a qu string quartet version of Yesterday. And there it's all signed by it's a copy, but it's all signed by, you know, all the members of the Beatles. And then they say and Mozart, which is funny because as a classical pianist, I know that Yesterday's theme is actually should have put Rachmaninoff because the theme is based off of a Rachmaninoff piano sonata, like an old piano sonata.
Oh
This
my
one
goodness.
that goes ya da da ya da da ya da 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 da. I'm the
Oh
horror singer. I can't believe I just did that. You need to
my
check
goodness.
that
You sounded good.
But yeah, so it was really cool to have that history with me as I was recording and mixing the song.
That is amazing. And so what was it like to record? Did you, and I still can't believe you recorded in Abbey Road and you edited at Air Studios.
Yeah. Amazing.
And that was
Amazing.
for the whole album at Abbey Road, or just
Whole album.
the whole album?
Yeah.
Wow. And how long did that take?
You know, it was actually a very easy recording process. I think all of the really hard work happens before the tedious work, I'd like to say, happens before so that when you get to the session, you don't waste any time. I don't have like an Ariana Grande budget. I don't have a pop budget. I may play pop music, but I don't have the pop budget yet. So you have to be very, very conscious of moving things along. So we did 16 songs,
Yes.
and in 2 days, and then the third day we did choir and pickup. So we had the English National Opera come in on day three, and then we had the drummer and the guitarist and the violinist, and everyone came in on day three. And so we did the whole album in, yeah. Recorded it in 3 days.
And
And
you have,
mixing took
yeah.
like a week. The mixing took forever, actually. It took months, but I was in London for a week to mix.
Oh my goodness. And you had one of the London orchestras, didn't you?
Yes, I was so lucky to have the Royal Philharmonic. They are so
Fantastic.
gracious. They let me conduct them a few times, and yeah, it was
Amazing. Wow, that's fantastic. Well, I can't wait to hear it properly. Sit down and relax and listen to it all. So I believe it's your debut album under your new label, Popsicle Music Group.
It sure
That's lovely. How come? I know you were with Sony
is.
before.
Sony still.
Yes.
It's like a break. You know, I always said when I left Sony, I said to Mark and Sarah, who I love at the team there, I said, this isn't a breakup. It's like a break. Like, you know, it's just for me to be, it was really about the label was about me being able to do what I wanted in my own time. I think, you know, I understand that Sony's a public company, and so, you know, things have a certain way of logistically getting done. And it's totally, there was nothing bad happened. I wanted to be able to release the music I wanted to release at the time I wanted to release it. And I also wanted to sign other artists. So, you know, this was a big thing for me because I was often helping and other artists in the classical space. You know, ever since the Grammys, especially, so many musicians reach out to me and I give them jobs I can't do, or I help them, you know, navigate this new, you know, in
Oh.
classical space, it's very different, right? So I wouldn't be here today without the help of so many, actually, it's a lot of women. Babyface is my mentor, but so all of the people who kind of got me to where I am, other than him, were all women from the age of young girls from the age of 12 till now. So I wanted to be able to do that for others. And so this label, I'm signing already two artists. Yeah, I can't talk about the first one, but the second one I'm signing, we're doing an original piece by Clarice Assad, amazing female composer. And it was written for cello, orchestra, and guitar. And I'm so excited about that because, you know, I think that oftentimes people who are exceptional at classical music are not exceptional at social media.
Oh, yes.
And so what you find online is like these amazing artists not being seen and not being visible because they don't. I mean, I can understand because I don't love doing social media. You know, it's something that I do for work, but it's not like the when I wake up in the morning, I can't wait to post. I can't wait to play Bach first thing in the morning. I can wait to post, right? So it's kind of my label is going to be not just for musicians that just releasing music, but also helping other musicians navigate this new space so that they can also excel in the and bring classical. But I'm only one person. We need more classical musicians bringing in other audiences. So that's really important to me. Something I couldn't do under a major label at the
I
time.
understand. Yes, I understand. And it seems really nice that you are now becoming a mentor. I mean, you've said, you've been mentored, and it's nice that now you're able to be a mentor to these young, upcoming, talented musicians, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I really believe that mentorship is so important for you. I wish I had a mentor when I was like 10. You know what I mean? Like younger. I think having a mentor is so important, especially when you're a young kid that knows what they want. You know, if you know what you want to do and you're so clear, I think it's just so important. That's why I love working with like, you know, Boys and Girls Club and different organizations that pair mentors with kids because we need that now. You know, most of the people I'm signing are obviously are not kids, they're adults, but they still need help navigating. I just have experience because I've been doing it for so long. You know, even before the Grammys, when I was signed to Babyface, I was doing studio sessions, I was doing fashion events in 2009, my first event for Armani in 2009. So, you know, it's been a long, you know, Simon Cowell said it's takes 10 years to become an overnight success. And, you know, I signed in 2009. I did the Grammys in 2019. So he was right on
Oh
the
my goodness.
dot.
Yeah, a lot of people think, oh, they're so lucky it just happened to them, you know.
Oh, it was like, and the reason Cardi found me and asked me to perform on the Grammys was because she saw me performing on social media. So, you know, I do understand the importance of, you know, social media allows people to see you and access you in a way that we never had. As a kid, I never had as a kid.
Yeah, I mean, it's important. You need to navigate. You need to know how it works, don't you? And outside of music, I mean, I believe you're also a real activist. You're really passionate about certain causes. If you can tell listeners some of the work you do with the different organizations you work with.
Yeah, you know, everything for me was about music education. Like I said earlier, I was really aware of how important music education is not just cognitively but like on a social level, right? So I knew that very early on. I used music. I had a couple of tragedies when I was young, and I played the cello. So I remember I would play cello all day, and it's like a form of meditation in a way. Like it helped me deal in a positive way with my emotions, and using that music as an outlet. So I knew that very early on. And wait, I forget the question now. I was going off of it.
Working, being an activist, working, helping.
Right. Music education. So that was always the core. And then I started working on anti-human trafficking in 2006. And my first speech at the UN, I was so nervous. And I said, why is my first speech ever have to be at the UN? Like it's like where they type everything verbatim. You can't make mistakes. And so they document everything there. So I was as I was writing the speech, I was thinking about all of the factors that go into human trafficking. So you have like poverty, right? You have lack of identity, lack of self-worth, lack of community. And these are the predators go after those people who are at risk. And then you think about music education. What music education does builds community, gives kids self-worth. They're less likely to tolerate abuse. They have dignity. They have, you know, so it's like, I was like, wait, this is crazy. And so my speech became music education as a tool of prevention for human trafficking. And then I realized that music education is a tool of prevention for almost so many terrible things. It really makes you a better human. I think that music education can change the world in one generation. I think when you implement music education in schools, especially at-risk communities, you see a huge change immediately. So that kind of became the basis of my activism. I'm just trying to get kids excited about learning an instrument, knowing that when they do that, they are less likely to tolerate abuse, they're less likely to do drugs, they're less likely to skip school, they're less likely to talk back and be disciplined in school. I mean, these are all scientific facts. So that became, yeah, that is the basis of all the activism that I do.
That is amazing. And I think we feel the same as well over here in the UK. You know,
Yeah,
all
and the UK had the best music programs. I hear now they're cutting a lot of them. I keep getting notices about choirs. You know,
Yeah.
Cambridge, I think they cut their choir. Yeah,
It's
it's a
not good. It's not good. And I mean, you know, all of us musicians, you know, lovers of music also believe what you believe. It's just music is just so important for one's soul, for spirit, for keeping you on track. It's beautiful, it's heavenly. I don't know, it's hard to express what it is, isn't
No,
it?
it's hard, and I think that's the problem, is why administrations and at a systemic level they aren't prioritizing it, because it's not a tangible thing. You can't say like,
Yeah.
here is the benefit of your soul. Here is your soul on music. Like,
Yeah.
you can't touch it, but you can
Yeah.
feel. Yeah.
Yeah. And I believe as the champion of music education, you are the youngest board member of the Liberace Foundation at the Manhattan School.
I am. We're actually, we have the Manhattan School of Music has an event tonight. So I'm really excited. I'm on the International Advisory Board. We're being honored. So it's really excited. Yes. And we just had our board meeting yesterday. It was amazing to see just the amazing work they're doing. And what a community they built for me as a kid. You know, I also studied with Herbert Stetson at Juilliard as well. And it was just a, it was a, it, having that kind of community of people who have the same interests as you and support you is just such a beautiful thing. So I, it was important for me to do whatever I can to join the board and help them raise money.
It's fantastic. You know, I studied at Manhattan School.
No way, with who?
I studied with Nina Svetlanova and Constance Keane. I
Wait, I
mean,
know Constance Keane.
she
Why do I know?
died. She was always wearing red. She was married to a famous composer, Abram Chasins.
Oh my
But
gosh,
yeah.
that's so crazy. Wait, you need to come back and visit us.
I have been, and it's just, it's changed so much.
It's so fancy now, right? Have you seen the new concert hall?
I think I have.
It's
But
amazing.
the most ironic thing, and I know this interview is about you, but I was on a Liberace scholarship.
You said that. That's so cr you told me that before. That is so crazy. I so was it a Liberace scholarship at Manhattan School?
Yes.
No way.
Yes.
We need to be best friends. I feel like we're like connected. We're like soul
Let's get in
sisters.
touch afterwards. Yeah.
Yes. Oh my gosh, that's so wild. That makes me feel so good, because the Liberace Foundation, yeah, they're so amazing. And Liberace was really someone who
Oh,
I
yeah.
idolized, because when I was told I don't be like Liberace, and I looked him up online, I was like, wait, I want to be like Liberace.
But you are in a certain way. You're such a showman, showwoman. You are. You know, you've got that pizzazz, and he had that, you know.
Well, he was really able to take classical music and bring it to the masses, right? So he was actually more traditional than me. He didn't use like, you know, rappers and like hip hop beats, but he was just, you know, piano and orchestra. So he was really classical, but using covers, I guess, incorporating covers. And I loved the way that he just, you know, was him authentically himself and didn't conform to what, you know, he got a lot of criticism and he took it, you know, so I
Yeah, no. I'm so glad you're carrying that on, though. That's so lovely. So lovely. Goodness, what am I going to ask you now? Well, you've told me who your biggest idol, biggest mentor is. Any others that you would, let's say, travel halfway across the world to go and hear, go and play for, go and speak to?
I think my biggest living idol is Yo-Yo Ma. He was the first classical concert I ever went to, and I actually met him. Questlove did this. He does a series of events called Quest for Craft, and Yo, I happened to be sitting there with I happened to be in the audience when he was talking to Yo-Yo Ma, and they ran out of tape, and I was sitting right behind him, and Amir introduced me to him. And he was so lovely, and I just, I love, not only do I love his playing, I love his soul. And, as a young girl, when I listened to his music, he also did things outside of the box, with
Yeah.
Appalachian Spring even, but like the yeah bum bum ba dum ba yeah bum bum ba da, that the that tango he did with I think
Yes, Libertango.
Libertango. It was so amazing, and
Oh,
it was
gorgeous.
fun, and I loved that he was able to again step outside of that very core classical box if he chose, and that inspired me. His love for Bach
Absolutely.
inspired me, so I would travel anywhere for him.
And I know you're playing so much with so many different artists, but do you still have time to play? I hate to say the word pure because people are saying, but do you still have time to play classical, like a Beethoven sonata, a Bach prelude? Do you still have time for that? Or,
Yeah, I always make time for Bach. Bach
Mm-hmm.
is one of my favorite pieces to practice and play. I think it's very challenging, which I love, but also the musicality is not written in, so it really forces me to go really deep and really be in touch with how I'm feeling. And so it's a really great exercise for me, pianistically, but also like energetically and emotionally. I love, I love doing a Chopin Nocturne too. I always like to play that when people come over, because it's just, people love Chopin, right? When they don't understand classical music, Bach is a little bit less accessible, right? It's just as beautiful to me, but often I get a more loud reaction to things like Chopin and Rachmaninoff. But definitely always, and my album has classical music on it as well, core classical. It has the Rameau. I love Rameau.
Gorgeous.
Yeah, and then it has, that's an arrangement for just piano and orchestra, and then O Mio Bambino Caro. And film music. I think film music, there's always this question, does film music, is it, it does it belong in the concert halls? And I think yes. I think it's amazing, and I think it's connects with audience, and so I have the Godfather on there.
Fantastic. No, but it's interesting what you say about Bach. There's not much written into the score, is there? He doesn't, if you look at an Urtext edition, there's no crescendos, diminuendos, staccatos. It's, you can make it how you want to make it. So you've actually got to improvise a bit with Bach, be very creative.
Definitely. It's, I mean, Bach is improvisation to me. I think when I look at his partitas, especially like the overture number four, like in D major, I'm like, this, I feel like he was just riffing, like riffing really well. Like it sounds very improvisational. And it's not often, as a pianist, especially when you've studied classical music, and your teachers are very, as very, very, very specific about how you should be playing, how musically you should be doing things. I remember when I played a Bach prelude for Mr. Stessen, he had me learn it a completely different way than Mr. Fishbein at Manhattan School of Music. And that was so challenging, because I had learned it first with Mr. Fishbein, and I was like, this is how he told me to play it. And then Mr. Stessen was like, that's terrible, you should play it this way. And so I remember, and I specifically did that because I wanted to see how different the interpretations were. And they were both considered right to them, and they're both considered wrong, and I was like, they're all right. It's like it can be different every time you play it. So it was a fun exercise.
That is really funny, but teachers have their thing, don't they? If you don't follow their
Yeah.
way. Yeah, it's really interesting. As a musician, and I do often ask this to the most virtuosic of pianists, do you have any technical struggles on the piano?
I can barely reach an octave all the time. I can barely reach an octave. My hands are tiny. Can you see? Yeah, no, they're actually, my pinky needs to be an inch longer. Like if I got any, I've never had plastic surgery, but if I were to, it would be on my hands. I would get a hand augmentation. But yeah, that's always been such a struggle. I almost quit piano, because I felt so frustrated. I couldn't play Liszt, La Campanella. Other people in my school would just like dun 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 dun. I'm like over here, like trying to reach. Even Chopin Polonaises, sometimes the chords are so big, and I was like, why? I'm not going to have a career in music. I cannot compete with my peers, because my hands are just, I'm like, I feel like I can't compete with them. And
Mm.
that's kind of another reason why I started exploring, especially Bach and early music, written for a harpsichord, so much
Yeah.
my hand much better, but also exploring other styles of music that I felt comfortable in, hand position wise. So it was like practical, and fun, and then and it allowed me to feel motivated to keep going.
Oh, so very interesting. That's interesting. I'm getting to the end now, but I felt like I wanted to ask you if there was any advice you could give to an amateur pianist about how to improve. What might that be?
I would say, an amateur pianist, there's so much advice I could give. I mean, I don't want to say practice, but I think practicing your piano or practicing your instrument, whatever that may be, with practicing mindfulness, I think that combination is really important to not be too hard on yourself, and to not be too overly critical, because I know, in this space, classical space, as you know, perfection is always the word, right? And I think that when you're, especially if you're an amateur pianist and you're not entering like a competition and you're not going on stage, don't strive for perfection. You strive for excellence and just strive for enjoying and doing your best, and don't be too hard on yourself, because that can, I think, with a lot of kids especially, they want to quit. They feel like it's overwhelming and it's stressful, and you want to make good stress, not bad stress for your body. And so I would say, don't be too hard on yourself, and don't be too overly critical, and keep going.
I think that's really good advice. I do, because obviously, if you want to be a concert pianist, there's so much competitiveness as well, isn't there? But I think for an amateur, that's really good advice.
Yeah, I mean, as a performer, I suffered from stage fright, especially because I was like, if I got nervous and my hands got tight, they don't reach. It's like I have a physical problem, and I had to tell myself that, this isn't about perfection, it's about a performance. I'm trying to connect with my audience, and if I make a mistake, they don't care. 99% of the people don't care. Now, I can tell myself that all day long and still be crying for every mistake that I make, but I would tell any pianist, whether they're an amateur, or any musician, whether they're an amateur or a professional, to treat the stage like it's just get there and just know it's not going to be perfect, and that's what makes it beautiful.
Of course. No, great words there.
Yeah.
Great. So I think we've actually come to the end, and I thought I'd just ask you what you're up to for the rest of the day. What's your day like today?
As soon as we end this call, I'm going to go back into my mask, and then I have three events tonight, for it's AAPI month, so it's we're doing a lot of AAPI things, and I'm really
What's
excited.
API? Just remind us what.
Sorry, AAPI is Asian American Pacific Islander Heritage Month, so we like to celebrate Asian America.
Fantastic.
Yeah, so we have a few events, and then the Manhattan School Music Gala tonight. I wish you were here.
How many outfits are you going to be changing?
Today is three, only three today. I wish I put on an outfit for you.
Don't worry, we're just listening here. We can't see you.
For
But
you.
only three. How wonderful. How
Yeah.
wonderful. Oh, well, listen, I'll let you get on and put your face mask on and do all the preparation.
Sorry.
No, you're great. And I'm sure people are going to enjoy listening to your new album and following your career. You're
Thank you. And
exciting.
thank you for everything you do. I think Pianist Magazine is just such a dream to talk to you.
Oh,
I
thank you.
mean, I've been looking at your magazine my whole life, so thank you.
It's nice to hear. Thank you. And thank you so much for joining me today, Chloe. That was a track from Chloe Flowers' new album, I Love Me More. Pianist podcasts are free, and a really good way to support what we do is by subscribing to Pianist. Visit our website at pianistmagazine.com and listen to us on YouTube by searching Pianist Magazine. And don't forget to sign up to our newsletter, which is full of extra playing tips and lots of useful information. Go to pianistmagazine.com to find out how to sign up.